And from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Jennifer Pemberton with this news. The director of the Alaska Division of Public Assistance is no longer in her post. A voicemail message on Shonda O'Brien's state cell phone yesterday directed callers to the deputy director.
You've reached the voicemail for the director of the Division of Public Assistance. This position is vacant.
State officials declined an interview but said O'Brien, quote, left state service on Monday. The news comes as the division has been under fire for its failure to issue food stamps and Medicaid benefits in a timely manner. In December, KTOO reported that thousands of Alaskans had been waiting months for their benefits. State Health Commissioner Heidi Hedberg blamed the backlog on last year's cyber attack and a recent surge of paperwork. But sources in the division told KTOO there were longstanding problems in the department, including chronic understaffing. In an email to Department of Health staff, Hedberg thanked O'Brien for her decades of work for the state. Juneau resident Deb Etheridge will replace O'Brien. She was previously the assistant director of Southeast Alaska Independent Living and has worked for the state's Department of Health before. She is scheduled to start on January 17th. Juneau's legislators are outlining their priorities for this year's legislative session. They say they hope to find new sources of state revenue, reduce out-migration, and improve the Alaska Marine Highway System. Representative Sarah Hannon will continue her efforts to tax vaping products.
17 years ago was the last time that we tweaked our tobacco tax, because vaping didn't, electronic cigarettes didn't really exist 17 years ago. They're not mentioned in it, and so providers of that product have argued you can't tax us because we're not named in the tax statute.
Governor Mike Dunleavy vetoed a tax on vaping products last year, saying he was against any tax increase on Alaskans. Hannon says she's hopeful this year as the state searches for new sources of revenue. She'd also like to see more funding for the Alaska Marine Highway System. She says it's a vital resource for Southeast communities year-round, especially for people traveling to Juneau for medical care. All three legislators pre-filed bills this week. One from Representative Andy Story would update certain aspects of the Alaska Performance Scholarship, which gives high school students money to attend an in-state post-secondary program. She says the goal is to encourage young people to stay in Alaska.
This would notify students in their junior year that, yes, they do qualify for the award if they continue to, you know, take the classes they have said they were going to. Right now, they don't know till the end of their senior year, and many kids choose earlier.
Story says she's optimistic that the state will increase the base student allocation. That's the amount of money per student that school districts receive from the state. A bill pre-filed by Senator Jesse Keel would give public service workers the option to pay into a pension. Keel says it will help reduce worker turnover.
Most people who work in public service in Alaska do it because they love it. We shouldn't make it an irrational choice economically for them to stick around.
The Juneau delegation will host a town hall meeting tomorrow night at Juneau Douglas High School Yada'a Katle from 5:30 to 7 p.m. Masks are required in school buildings. The chairman of Sea Alaska Corporation and four education officials are the finalists to serve as the chancellor of the University of Alaska Southeast. The Alaska Beacon reports that yesterday the university announced the shortlist of candidates for the job that will open when current chancellor Karen Carey retires at the end of June. The chancellor of UAS serves as the university's chief executive officer and will be appointed by University of Alaska President Pat Pitney. In an online statement, Pitney said that the finalists, quote, are all leaders chosen from a pool of diverse and highly qualified candidates. UAS has a main campus in Juneau and satellite campuses in Ketchikan and Sitka. It's the smallest of the three schools that includes the University of Alaska Fairbanks and the University of Alaska Anchorage. The five finalists will visit all three UAS campuses in the coming weeks. The final selection will be made after those visits, likely in the middle or end of February, according to Pitney. You can find a list of the finalists' names at ktoo.org. A professional skier came to speak with Juneau kids last week. Her visit was part of an effort to remove some of the barriers that face Alaska Native youth who want to ski. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry has more.
Ellen Bradley is a professional skier, but a trip to Eagle Crest last winter was the first time she'd ever skied in Tlingit Ani, her traditional homelands. Now she's working to help Alaska Native youth get everything out of skiing that she does.
I think spending time on the land can address so many things in a person's life, but I think mental health is especially one of them, to just move your body with the land in this winter time, you know?
At the event, they're giving away prizes like a formline snowboard designed by Tlingit artist James Johnson. There's live music by Southeast Alaska favorite Yatsin. Bradley learned to ski from her dad as a young child in Washington State. She says it helped her feel connected to the land, but she didn't see many other Indigenous people on the slopes while she was growing up.
Like, I had my brother and I had my dad, and everyone else I skied with was white.
She says the sport can seem off limits, even to people who are Indigenous to the land a mountain sits on. Benson Bullock is helping kids sign up for ski trips with the Douglas Indian Association.
So last year, we got together and my supervisor said I should figure out a way to take kids up to Eagle Crest in March and April and get them lessons, get them gear, just get kids out on the mountain.
This year, he wants the program to get even more kids on the mountain. Bradley thinks that efforts to get kids in skis could mean more Indigenous people in the skiing industry as a whole.
So they can become the professional skiers, so they can become the ski instructors, the lifties, so they can eventually become the people running Eagle Crest.
Rylan Tompkins, one of dozens of kids at the event, could be one of the future pros Bradley is thinking of.
What makes it exciting?
I like snow.
He hasn't skied or boarded yet, but his uncle Joe Tompkins is a Paralympic ski champion. Rylan says he wants to learn too. Bradley is hopeful that more and more Indigenous kids will start participating in snow sports.
I think the future of skiing in Alaska is Indigenous.
For Eagle Crest, that future is hitting the slopes in just a few weeks. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
And finally tonight, traditional Filipino folk dance and music classes are returning to Ketchikan this spring. The classes are part of a Ketchikan Wellness Coalition program aimed at promoting health and cultural heritage in the Filipino community. KRBD's Reagan Miller has the story.
Growing up in Ketchikan, Lynn Buendia McClendon's parents put her in traditional dance classes when she was around 8 years old.
We did it for festivals, and we did parties, and we did it for the cruise ships.
She remembers tinikling, a dance performed with bamboo sticks.
There's also a candle dance, and I don't remember exclusively what the candle dance was supposed to represent, but we all had candles that we held in our hands, and it was all that one was all women. The tinikling was usually co-ed, so it was boys and girls, and it was usually pairs, so like my brother's dance, my cousin's dance.
And for the younger dancers, there was the coconut dance.
They do that with coconut shells. And they were always laughing and having fun.
But right now, there isn't a public place in Ketchikan for adults and kids to learn these types of traditions. The Filipino Community Center closed its doors in 2015. That's why the Ketchikan Wellness Coalition applied for a grant from the Alaska Community Foundation. The grant will allow the organization to start at Mugseyawan Ketchikan, a series of traditional folk dance and music classes with dedicated instructors. The classes will start this spring for adults and children alike. For the next generation, it's a doubly important step towards connecting with culture. McClendon lives with her children in California now and hopes they'll one day be able to learn the same dances she did growing up in Ketchikan.
I really treasure and like those memories and that we were part of that. And now my kids are starting to ask questions, and I'm hoping that they'll be able to pick it up and be able to pass it on to their kids.
Gina Kaplan took up traditional Filipino folk dance when she was in elementary school. Her parents moved to Ketchikan from the Philippines and signed her up to learn.
When my parents had introduced it to us, saying, hey, it's really important that you learn kind of the cultural dance of like where we came from and trying to pass along traditional dance. And, you know, as a child, you're like, oh, great. We're being forced into like entertaining our parents.
She now lives in Oregon. But looking back, Kaplan is grateful for the chance. She's still friends with many of the others who took the classes with her over four decades ago.
I think about those days on a weekend when we as a community would gather, and it would always be potluck style, and you would have all kinds of traditional Filipino foods brought on to a point where it was like an event, a fun event that as kids that we look forward to being able to see each other and convene and celebrate, you know.
She hopes that the classes will be a way for younger Filipino people in Ketchikan to connect with their roots.
That's KRBD's Regan Miller reporting. I hope you enjoyed this mostly sunny day in Juneau, currently 27 and mostly cloudy. Tonight, slight chance of snow, low in the mid-20s. This is KTOO News. I'm Jennifer Pemberton.